You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Davidson Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Today, I chatted with Julian. He's the CEO and co-founder of the sustainability company Panda. Panda develops this insulation material called BioPuff. Now, this material can be applied to the fashion industry and put into coats and such. It can also be potentially in the future applied to the industrial sector and really anything that requires insulation. BioPuff is a biomaterial and it's applied through sustainable farming. It's developed in coordination with farmers who are interested in not only protecting the wetlands, but regenerating them as well. Panda raised a 2 million seed back in November of 2025, and more recently, just last month, opened up their crowdfunding. So it's an interesting company. They're getting started, and they're doing very, not only interesting work, but important work in the global sustainable practice. So I hope you're looking forward to that. So without further ado, the episode. Hello, Julian, and welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Hi there, David. It's lovely to be on.
Yes, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. It's something that we haven't really had on the podcast. I feel like I say this every week, which is a good news for us that we're kind of so varied. But, you know, it's a company that does something that I don't think is really that common. It's an approach and a focus that isn't that common. So without giving anything else away, how about I let you just present yourself and the company?
Sure. My name's Julian Ellis-Brown. I'm one of the co-founders and CEO at Panda. We're a biomaterials company based in Bristol in the UK. And we're developing new novel materials made out of plants grown on regenerated wetlands.
Great. Okay. Well, then let's get right into it. I want to hear kind of your beginning. So what kind of first pulled you into this space? Because, you know, from your background, what I saw, it's varied. There's a mechanical engineering degree in there. There's a focus on sustainable materials. So obviously you already had kind of an inkling towards what it is that you do now. But I kind of want to hear about what it is that started all of this for you.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, my background's in engineering. I always had an interest in how things work, how things are made. And that eventually led me to an innovation master's where I learned about design and really what is the kind of implications of, you know, how materials are made and their effects on the planet. And that really got me interested in new materials, new supply chains, sustainability, and really brought us, along with my co-founders, to our kind of first question, which is, how might we, or is it possible to create a material supply chain that is inherently healing to the planet?
Hmm. Okay, well, that last line, I think, is a perfect pass over to my next question. And originally, you came onto my radar with your seed round, which was last year. Let me look at my notes here. Yeah, November of last year, right? And that's when I first heard about you. I thought, oh, well, this is interesting. And then the topic of wetlands is something that I want to talk about with you because, you know, for readers and listeners who don't really know exactly and understand exactly what they do, and I kind of include myself among them, because even though I've read PR materials and done research for this episode, I'm still a bit, you know, I don't have a mechanical engineering degree. So maybe kind of explain why wetlands is such an important focus and this topic of not only good for the environment, but a regeneration of the environment, why that plays into this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess if we think about how materials are made today, really what we're talking about are extractive supply chains. So if we think about how textiles are manufactured, we're either extracting resources from the land by degrading it and growing plants, which we're then extracting fibers from, or obviously we're creating them the vast majority of them out of synthetics. So extracting oil from under the ground and transforming them into these polymers that then become polyester and polyamide and all of these synthetic materials that make up our clothes. And so really what we're interested in is, what are some of the most powerfully healing places on our planet? And that's what really led us to wetlands. So wetlands cover just 3% of our land area, but they are actually our largest land-based store of carbon. They store twice as much carbon as all of the trees in the world combined in about a tenth of the area. They're such key biodiversity assets. Over 50% of all species in the world rely on them in some way for their survival. And they also have all of these other amazing sort of ecosystem services of flood resistance, drought resistance. It really, the list kind of goes on and on. And so really, we're interested in, okay, how can we leverage these amazing spaces to do more, to do better? How can we expand them? And sadly, over the past couple of hundred years, hundreds of millions of these wetlands, of these amazing spaces have been drained and damaged. And so really our mission is, okay, how can we regenerate these spaces and bring value to them, new value to them, so that we can encourage farmers who have historically drained vast areas of wetlands to actually re-wet them, grow a plant, which we can then purchase and transform into high-value materials. So that's really where the value of wetlands really inspired us from the beginning. And where we've landed on today as a business model is we've developed technology which allows us to extract fibers from plants grown on regenerated wetlands and transform them into high-quality textiles for the fashion industry. It starts with a material called BioPuff, which is a plant-based insulation used to replace goose down or synthetic insulations as well. And so that enables us to connect these amazing environments and the regeneration of them to the production of healthier materials for the fashion industry as well.
Okay. Well, and I want to dig into a lot of different parts there about working with landowners and farmers and the fashion industry. Those are, but just something that came to me at this moment is thinking, how globally adaptable is this? So, you know, we're talking about wetlands, you're saying, you know, all these percentages and how applicable it is, but there must be some kind of location-based factor in all of this, right? Or do you feel that this is material and application that can be scaled globally?
So there's hundreds of millions of hectares of wetlands around the world. So, but they do tend to sort of hub in hotspots in certain areas. So you get temperate wetlands and peatlands, which are across Northern Europe, North America, and then tropical ones as well, ones which you might find more in places like Indonesia. And our supply chain is already fairly global. We're sourcing from all across Europe, into North America as well. And so we really see this as a kind of global supply chain. It's a global problem, fundamentally, that we've been draining these peatlands and wetlands all over the world. Governments, farmers are desperate to look for solutions. Okay, how can we regenerate these areas? But how can we still make sure that we can earn an income from these lands which were previously being farmed?
And this topic here of, you know, global, obviously fashion is a global industry. It's something that you can disrupt at a global scale. And automatically, I think anybody listening to this is going to start thinking about fast fashion and the impact that that has on the climate, on sustainability. Can a material like BioPuff, I mean, really affect that system? Or is it just reserved more to kind of premium brands, brands that want to have an alternative kind of eco label to what they're doing? Or do you see this as being able to say, no, we can do the whole system, everything?
Yeah, we really want BioPuff and regenerative materials in general and to be accessible to the masses, and we are driving our price point to one which is really competitive against existing incumbents, so that we can have the impact that we frankly need to as well. And fundamentally, we want to be offering a material which doesn't cost any more, but is you know, vastly regenerative, but also performs better than these existing ones. We want a material that is warmer than synthetics, that is more breathable as well. And these are the targets which we're looking to really offer within BioPuff and any future materials we develop.
I saw too that you've partnered with brands that. I'm not a big fashion guy, but you know, even I recognized a few of them. I saw Estelle McCarthy, Sheep Inc., Parley. So you've engaged with these brands and they've engaged with BioPuff. What has that kind of shown you about what these fashion brands really care about in terms of the product that you're offering and also how they want to engage with a new company, a startup?
Yeah, I think there's been like a few waves of movement of materials within the fashion space. And the first one was sort of the shift to recycled, moving away from, you know, virgin materials towards like recycled polyester. But now there's a new wave, which is like a real demand to move towards what's called next gen materials. These next gen textiles, of which Pondit are material BioPuff is one of them, because they're able to offer vastly improved environmental credentials. They have, you know, full traceability as well. We're able to tell them exactly where their fibers have come from that make up these textiles that are going into their clothes. And because they're able to perform and offer that sort of value uplift for their customers as well. And those three things is what is leading to a real wave alongside, you know, a whole bunch of legislation that's coming through places like the EU to encourage new, existing and new fashion brands to shift over to these materials.
Mm. And you mentioned obviously the EU want to promote these kind of materials. Do you feel that kind of want is also available globally, or is it kind of a European push?
I think it's we have customers all over the world. And so I think there is a global interest. And I think there's always an interest across the board in innovation. Mm-hmm. And how can I have an edge on my competitor? How can I can offer something new and different to my customer? And I think that's why there's always interest in an edge there. But the EU is really what's leading, perhaps on the regulatory side of things. Sure. And they're bringing in this new eco-design legislation. Every garment's going to have a product passport associated with it. And that's really going to shine a light on why it's so important that materials like BioPuff use instead of the alternatives, simply from the fact that we know where our materials come from. And that is not the case for the vast majority of materials which are used in this industry today.
Okay. Well, you've spoken about your partnership level, and that's one side of the company. But another side of the company that I find very interesting and even unique is how you've developed it alongside kind of the supply chain. So, alongside the landowners, alongside the farmers. And I'd hazard to say that that's not very common in the startup, to kind of have that conversation at the very beginning and to make sure that the company works with really the ones that are kind of providing the material and providing the product forward. So talk to us a little bit about that, about developing a company with these people in mind and alongside them.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had to solve lots of different kinds of problems. So wetland farming supply chains like don't exist really in as a established industry. So we've had to sort of build it from the ground up. That's mm-hmm. going to farmers, working with them to understand why re-wetting their land and growing wetland crops might be a benefit to them. And that's about creating a really compelling economic vision and model for them and showing why it's actually the sensible financial decision in order to be able to do this. It could be for a bunch of reasons. But a big one is the fact that as we have more extreme weather events year on year within across the world, things like flooded lands in agriculture or extreme drought is becoming more and more likely. And so, but when you re-wet these environments, you actually sort of are building that resilience into them. They become not only that individual plot of land, but the land around them becomes more resilient to these kind of weather events. And so there's a sensible decision there from an economic perspective. And from just a regular one, if you were to just consider it, this is just another crop, like I grow anything else, obviously slightly different as it's on a marsh rather than on a typical farmland. And so we've now built the world's largest sort of supply chain of this crop that we grow, bulrushes, around the world. And all of that is then sort of is collected and processed in our facility in Bristol.
So is this process of re-wetting, of farming, is that something that's kind of difficult for the farmers to take on? Or is that a practice and something that they can easily adapt into what they're already growing?
So more and more often we hear about this sort of term of mosaic model of farming, where you have different types of farming happening all within a fairly sort of local region of each other. And that's where we see our model fitting in most effectively as well. It's not a massive investment and often it can be quite simple to do. Over the past sort of 300 years, we have built an enormous infrastructure in draining water out of our farmland, drainage ditches, pumps. We have, you know, water boards all across the UK and Europe that manage how we extract waters from spaces, because quite often that is where we're intensively farming the land. So what it's more about is reversing some of those things that we're doing already to bring that water table up, rather than, you know, introducing some massive infrastructural change. It might be turning off a pump or filling in a drainage ditch or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to imagine, and you mentioned the topic of flooding, I have to imagine that these farmers are very excited at the idea of a crop and a material that's going to help protect their overall livelihood, and not just that one crop. There's in one of your press releases that you passed on, there was a Will Barnard, I think, and he was a farmer that was quoted in the article talking about this. So I have to imagine that this is usually a very big plus for them when considering about engaging with you.
Definitely. And, you know, a lot of the farmers that we work with have started working and piloting with us because, you know, they've had land which is flooded year in, year out. They're planting it. They're seeding it in September. And then over the winter, they're losing the crop because the land's flooding. And we offer an immediate remedy to that through our kind of solution. So I think that is a really exciting option for farmers. And that's really why our business model is kind of two-pronged. So we're able to offer this kind of like wetland alternative solution for farmers. We're able to offer these kind of new innovative materials to the fashion industry. And by wedding those two things together, if we can crank up the use of Biopuff within fashion and textiles, we can leverage a huge amount of environmental and social benefit on the agricultural side as well.
Talk to me a little bit, return to the product itself. Talk to me a little bit more about what does Biopuff go into? Jackets, sheets? What's kind of the practical kind of application to where Biopuff might be seen by the general public?
Yeah, definitely. So Biopuff is an insulation material, like a wadding, and it'll go into jackets, go into really anything where you need some sort of padding in it. And sort of, I think around 145 billion square meters of wadding is made each year globally. It's an enormous market if you think about everything that might need to be insulated, everything that might need to have some wadding material in it. We're starting with apparel. That's our initial focus. Mm-hmm. But we really see like a whole industry beyond this. If you think about interiors, if you think about automotive, even right. if you think about things like soft toys, things like that. Huge, huge possibilities of markets.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of where I was going with this. So there is kind of an industrial application as well to this if developed in the right way.
Yeah, definitely. And there's tests that or trials that we've done, not just on within apparel, but also working with interiors companies. Companies that make pillows and duvets and things like that. And there's real potential for a material like BioPuff to disrupt the market on a very large scale.
Okay. Well, it's as I said before, that you came across my desk because of your $2 million raise. And I also wanted to hear about, because then more recently in April, which I think is when I reached out to say, let's do an episode, you went through the crowdfunding site. And I want to hear about the why. You've gone through institutional investors. There was interest. You raised $2 million, and then you turned to crowdfunding, which is interesting because I feel like most SEUs start with crowdfunding and then you go to institutional investors. So why is it that you've made this change now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for us, we realize what we're building at Ponder is greater than just a kind of B2B materials company. We're also building a product that's going to be used by individuals, by consumers within BioPub as well. And we're also building a community of people who are incredibly passionate about wetland farming and wetland regeneration. And we often, were asked about things like a crowdfund historically. So we've always had it in the kind of back of our minds. But recently we've also seen new opportunities within our business model. So beyond just the seed round that we raised last year, we've seen new opportunities come up. So one of the byproducts of our processing, not to say the word seed too much, are the actual seeds from the plants, which is a byproduct of our process. We've developed technology to encapsulate those seeds and then sell them back into the farming supply chain that we're scaling as well. And when there are targets to regenerate, tens of millions of hectares of wetlands, this could be a real opportunity for us to really crank up our growth and revenue as well. And so what we also identified is, well, if this is another piece of the development that we're going through, we're going to need some funding to help develop that as well. And so we thought we'd do a top-up of our seed round. It's on the same terms as these institutional investors came in. So a really unique opportunity for an individual retail investors to come and join the round. And it's going to enable us to sort of accelerate some of the growth points outside of our regular market entry as well.
Okay. And do you have a cap on the crowdfund, or is it
open? So the kind of additional, our initial sort of target that we've set on the platform, including some of the private money which we've raised, it's about 1.4. Mm-hmm. Probably go as far as 1.6, maybe 1.7. But yeah, that's the initial target.
Okay. Well, on this topic then of funding, I always find it interesting because we're obviously covering as much as we can from the entire European startup ecosystem, which includes a lot of different companies. But I try and do a little bit of background research before chatting with people on here and just kind of look at what the funding has looked like for their sector. And this is loose, and it's because it's always hard to say this company is in the exact same sector as this company. But from what I saw, I found around 87 million that was moving this year in 2026 for kind of sustainable materials, biomaterials, circular materials, low carbon alternatives, what have you. So I was kind of wondering to hear a little about how you see Ponda fitting in this ecosystem. Do you feel that it has a unique offering? Do you find that there are competitors? Is there a wish to kind of, you know, how do you see the company existing within Europe and the startup ecosystem?
Yeah, I think we do see ourselves within that space of materials, next gen materials. We are very unique in the fact that no one else has decided to go out, build a wetland supply chain, develop a new technology around a material and bring it to market in the way that we have. But there are other competitors, there's other technologies out there. Most of them are more incumbent, but there are some sort of novel plant-based materials and insulations. But we have been able to differentiate ourselves as a brand and as a technology from many of those alternatives as well. Interesting that you mentioned that number of the amount of money. Is that private investment going into those sorts of companies? Okay, interesting as well, because we're also beneficiaries of quite a bit of like public funding as well on top of private funding, which has been fantastic, both on the kind of agricultural side, but also on this kind of technological side as well. And currently part of two £10 million Horizon Europe projects as well, both focused on how do we build markets around regenerating these wetland environments, which of course is why Ponda is so well placed in those environments to support that as well.
Sure. Well, I think we're coming naturally to the end here towards what I want to chat about and what I want to kind of hear you explain. And I guess my final question here is a very basic question, really, but where you see Ponda going in the next 5 years? Is it expanding the list of farmers that you have across the world? Is it more fashion partnerships, more funding? Where do you see Ponda in 5 years if everything goes to plan?
Yeah, absolutely. What Ponda in 5 years is going to be sourcing from potentially thousands of hectares of wetlands, creating tens of thousands of tons of CO2 being reduced each year from our kind of wetland interventions, huge amounts of biodiversity thriving as a result of this. And as a company, we want Biopath and Ponda to be established as innovators, but a trusted brand when it comes to performing materials within the fashion and apparel space. And so we're going to be expanding starting this year with some really significant initial partnerships and off-takers, but would want to be producing within the millions and millions of jackets within the next 5 years.
Well, I hope to see it too. I hope to be looking for my new winter jacket and see filled with BioPuff on the label.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
Good. Thank you very much, Julian. I look very much forward to hearing more about Ponda. I think it's very well placed. I like that it's a young company. I mean, 2020, I think, is the founding year, if I have my notes right.
Right.
You know, you're young, you're finding good funding, you're finding a good basis for it. And from what I see too, a young founding team, which I think is actually quite common when it comes to sustainability initiatives. So that's always great to see these kinds of things move forward successfully. So thank you very much, Julian, for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, we'll keep in touch.
Keep in touch. Bye-bye.
Bye.